about Klalei Talmud. Okay? An interesting topic. Now, this is not a lecture, this is a interactive
open
shiur Be'ezrat Hashem. So if we take a look at the Sifrut HaRabbanit, the literature of the Chachamim, after Hatimat the Gemara, after the Gemara is finished, the Gemara Bavlit is finished, let's just get some historical perspective, Victor. When is the Gemara sort of time of the Gemara ending, and now already you have the Chachamim who come after the Gemara?
Rav Asher, Ravina.
Good. So the Gemara says Ravina and Rav Asher Sofora. That's the end of Chachmei HaTalmud. That's 499. Ravina Haron passes away. 499 common years. So that's Hatimat HaTalmud. Now, after Hatimat HaTalmud, we have a whole vast, gamut of literature of the Chachamim. Okay, who are the Chachamim who come after the Chachmei HaTalmud? Saboraim, excellent. Okay, so let's say from according to Rav Shiri Ragaon, we'll talk about what is Rav Shiri Ragaon in a minute. From let's say 499, 500 to 589, right? About 100 years is the period of the Saboraim, and then who comes after the Saboraim?
The Geonim.
Okay, so the Geonim would be from there until, let's say, about 1,000. Okay, about 1,000. The Rav Hayegaon, if anybody heard of Rav Hayegaon, he passes away 1036. And they call Rav Hayegaon,
the last
Gaon, they call him, very interesting, Aharit HaGeonim Bizman V'Reshitam B'Hashivut. He's the latest chronologically, but he's the earliest, and it's a topic b'fnei atzmo, Rav Hayegaon, right? So he's considered the end of the Geonim. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have the time of the Rishonim. Okay, so
1036, you said?
1036 he dies, if I recall correctly, or 1038 maybe, I don't remember. That's Rav Hayegaon, okay? And then you have the time of the Rishonim. The Hachamim will live afterwards. So, how do we usually break up the period between the Rishonim and the Aharonim? Right? What's the line in the sand?
1500s?
What's that? 1500s? Yeah, 1500s. So, perfect. Until Maran, right? Usually, everything up until Maran, the Yosef Karo, 1500s, anyone mentioned in the Bet Yosef, we consider a Rishon. And anybody afterwards already is the Aharonim. Okay, so very, very important to see the historical context. How did these things happen, by the way, is also a topic. How does one day somebody wakes up and says, let's turn the light switch off, the time of the Tanaim is over, now let's call it the time of the, Amoraim, etc., and so on. It's not so simple. Somebody interesting, Hoker, Havlin, Rav Shlomo Zalman Havlin, he's published a lot. He wrote a nice article about how the transition between one time period and another is based on a monumental work. So the monumental work that ends off the Tanaim and now begins the Amoraim is, of course, the Mishnah. The monumental work that draws the line between the Amoraim and the later Hachamim would be the Gemara. And you have a similar thing when it comes to the Rishonim and the Aharonim. What's the monumental work that's accepted upon most of Am Yisrael, which transitions? The Shulchan Aruch, right? So you have a Hatima Sifrutit that makes the transition. Okay.
Thanks for the question.
Of course.
Chris, what was the time for Mishnah and the beginning of Merah? And also, first.
Okay, so let's go back even further. What's the year of Matan Torah? How long ago is Matan Torah?
I know the Hebrew date.
Oh, okay. So let's put it into, since most of us, Lo Azim, we think in non Lefim Minyan Ha'arivim, right? So around 1312 and 13, whatever it is, before the Common Era. 3,300 years ago was Matan Torah, right? And you have the Tkufa of the Nevuah. The Tkufa of the Nevuah ends with Anshei Knesset Gedolah. Okay? When is Churban Bayit Rishon is 586 before the Common Era, 70 years later, let's say 516, right, we're working backwards, is Aliyat Ezra, Ezra comes back. Then you have Tkufat Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, which you have between the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, you have Nevi'im, right? And Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, those are the last Nevi'im, right? And then you have, that's Tkufat Bayit Sheni, continues all the way until around 68, 69, the Common Era, that's when the Romans destroyed the Temple. So that's already the time of the Tanaim. So if you ask me, what is the time of the Tanaim, I would say you have Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the end of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah is Shim'on HaSadiq, Haya Mishiyarei Knesset HaGedolah, Pirkei Avot, right? Shim'on HaSadiq, according to the Gemara, he met Alexander the Great. When did Alexander the Great live?
300, right?
Right, 333 before the Common Era. So you have Alexander the Great, you have Shim'on HaSadiq, that's the end of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. That already we call the time of the early Tanaim, we call them the Zugot. The early, somebody heard of the Zugot?
Yes. Okay.
In Pirkei Avot, you have the Zugot. One is the Nasi, one is the Av Beit Din. That's the time of the Zugot. And the last Zug is five pairs. The last Zug, anybody? Right? Yeah.
Shammai Hillel.
Shammai and Hillel. Shammai HaZaken and Hillel HaZaken is the last Zug. That's about zero, the Common Era. And then, their students are the Tanaim, for sure. Okay, you can call the early Tanaim the Zugot. Around.
Rav, who's like the first Tana, Rav Yochanan?
Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai. Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai is a student of Hillel, right? So he would be a first generation Tana, right? And then you have five generations of Tanaim, okay? Five generations of Tanaim, and the final and last fifth generation of Tanaim is Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasih, who's Orech, he edits the Mishnah. That's the time of the Mishnah. So I would say the Mishnah is, the Tanaim is from about 0 to 200, 220. Then from 220, you have already Rav in Bavel, right? Rav in Shemuel.
Well, and that,
now Rav is the beginning of the Amoraim. Correct.
From 220.
See, that's why I wish I had a blackboard, right?
Yeah, so.
What? So from 220 on is the Amoraim. Right, let's say 0 to 220 is the Tanaim, right? Five generations of Tanaim. And then from 220 on is the Amoraim. Rav and Shemuel are first generation Amoraim in Bavel. There's about eight generations of Amoraim. And finally, Ravina HaHaron is 499. Okay, so now, that's Hatimata Talmud. So getting back to the first thing that we started with, how would I break up the different types of literature after the Talmud? Okay, the Hachamim who live after the Talmud, the Geonim and the Rishonim and the Aharonim. What types of work, what are the first books that come about after the Hatima of the Gemara? So let's start. If you would ask most people, they would tell you the following. Okay, they would tell you, well, we have Sifrut of Perushim, Hidushim and Perushim on the Talmud, right? There's a whole genre of literature of the Hachamim explaining and interpreting the Talmud. Give me an example. What's that? No. Give me an example. You're right. You're two steps ahead of me. Okay. No, wasn't it? What's a Perush of a Rishon who writes Perush on the Gemara?
Rishon,
okay. Rashi. Okay, so Perush Rashi is a type of Parshanut Gemara, right? I won't read Rashi by itself, only in conjunction or after I read the Sugya, I'm going to read Rashi. That's a genre of literature, right? It's Perushim that's coming to help me understand the Gemara, okay? Mm-hmm. Who is the first to make a Perush on the entire Talmud? 70 years before Rashi. 70 years before Rashi, Rabbeinu Hananel ben Hushiel. Rabbeinu Hananel ben Hushiel lived in North Africa, in Karawan, in Tunisia of today. He wrote a Perush. We don't have everything, but he wrote a Perush in Mekif, it called a Talmud, 70 years before Rashi. Rabbeinu Hananel ben Hushiel.
So that's the first Parshan, right?
That is, well, you have sporadic Perushim of the Geonim. Right, they asked him Teshuvah. What is, can you explain to me this sugya? And they explain the sugya. But a perush that I would call a systematic perush mekif, Rabbeinu Hananel. Mm-hmm. Okay, Rabbeinu Hananel, 7 years before Rashi. So one type of literature after the Gemara is Sifruta Perushim Vehidushim. Okay? Then you have, for example, Sfarim Shel Halakha. Sfarim Shel Halakha. What's an example? Hilchot Tarav Alfas, the reef. Another example?
The Tur.
Excellent. Bi'akov Bala Turim. That's a Sefer Halakha. Right, this already, I don't learn the Gemara. I don't have to learn the Gemara to learn the reef. I learn the reef by itself, right? Mishneh Torah L'Rambam, Shulchan Aruch. So, these are works that, this is a type of literature, a genre of literature, that summarize the halakha separate from the Gemara. Meaning, we're deducing from the Gemara the halakha, and it's in its own work, right? Sifrei Psakim, right? In the time of the Gaonim, you have halachot psukot of Rav Yehudai Gaon, you have halachot gidolot, Rabbi Shimon Kayara, different Gaonim already put this type of literature into being. So again, we have Sifruta Perushim, La Talmud, right? I study in conjunction with the Talmud. And then you have Sifrei Halacha Psakim. And then you have another type of Sifrut, very interesting, which is Sifrut Hashut. Okay, what am I talking about, Victor?
Shevut
Sponza.
Yes.
Sponza, you got the fancy name for it, you fit. So, Shelot Teshuvot. So, Shelot Teshuvot is also not something that I learned necessarily. I don't have to learn the Gemara with it. I read the Teshuvah by itself. Okay, it also has a magama, purpose of telling me the halakha. I would say if the Sifrei HaPsakim is more of halakha, the Sifrei HaShut are more halakha l'maaseh. What's the difference?
What do they apply to just now? And like Mishneh Torah would apply for the centuries of Ethan, but his response would be just for that time period.
Yes, sir. You learn with the Hakam. Okay? So, Halakha, Sifrei Psakim of Halakha, that's Halakha. It's Halakha Dorot, as Moshe says, right? It's Halakha in the abstract. Sifrei Hashut is very interesting. It shows how the Hacham in a given generation, in a given time and place, applied the Halakha, which is the Halakha in theory, to his specific time and place, he turned it into Halakha l'maaseh. Not necessarily the Psak of this time and generation is going to apply to the next. You have to reapply it, right? But very interesting. Well, Sifrei Hashut is also very unique because it incorporates a lot of things, right? Hacham, it's an actual question. He opens the Gemara, brings in the Korot, right? It also, there's a lot of historical information. Out of all these types of literature that we said, the one that has the most historical information is Sifrei Shelot Teshuvot, because you actually see the questions that trouble this and this kihilah and that kihilah in certain times and places. A lot of historical information that they learn from the Sifrei Shelot Teshuvot. Okay, Ken.
Before the Sifrei Halakha came, the Tur and the Rif, what did the people do for Halakha? They
were
him and the
Shelot Teshuvot.
That's
an excellent question. So before you had Sifrei Psakim, okay, so they sent many Shelot Teshuvot. They sent Shelot Teshuvot is very old. In the time of the Geonim already, they sent questions to the Geonim. We have questions in the Geniza that were sent from North Africa to the Geonim in Bavel, right? But it's a very important point what he's saying, because before the Hachamim come along and make Sifrei Psakim, the actual halakha is a little bit less accessible to the public. The hidush, and this is not the hidush of the Rambam, contrary to what people may think, the hidush of making Sifrei Psakim is to make, a horizontal society, to make the halakha more accessible to everybody. I don't need to go to Hashem, to the Pope, to get what's the halakha, tell me what that. No, it's accessible to the common man. That's why it's important. But again, the Rambam was not the first one to do this. Already in the early time of the Gaonim, we have small little, I don't know what they're called, epistles, or small little works of psakim of halakha. Okay, you have a work, Basar al Gabe Gehalim. It's a little random work of the Geonim. Basar is many of them. Basar al Gabe Gehalim, about halachot relating to Miliha and different things like that. You have already Rav Yehudai Gaon, we mentioned, makes halachot psukot. Right? He calls it halachot psukot. A little later, you have Rabbi Shimon Kayara. He makes halachot gedolot. That's Behag. Everybody quotes Bar halachot gedolot. Rabbi Shimon Kayara. So the Gaonim already started this type of literature. Rabbeinu Saadia Gaon has many of them in Arabic, even more to make it accessible to the common man. Okay, so all we set up until now is the following. We spoke about a little bit about the history, about the different kufot of the halakha. We said Hatimat HaTalmud is about 500 common era, and we said we have types of literature halakha. We're talking only about halachic literature after the Gemara. We broke them down into three. We said there's Sifrut HaPerushim LaTalmud, there's Sifrei Psakim, right, and Shelot Tshuvot. Okay, now Moshe already said what am I missing here, which is the topic of this class today. Okay, so most people tell you what I told you up until now. Okay, there's three genres of literature. There's the Perushim, there's the Sifrei Psakim, and there's Shelot Tshuvot. But there's one, I think, very important type of literature that we miss, that's missing from the equation, and that is Sifrut HaMevo'ot VeHaKlalim. Okay, there's a whole genre of literature that we could categorize as Sifrut HaMevo'ot or Sifrut HaKlalim, and that's what we're going to talk about. Okay, what is that more similar to between all the three other categories that we mentioned? If at all.
Kind of like a
perush,
but it's almost like a how-to.
Yes, so I agree with Meir. I think it's kind of like a perush, meaning it's similar to the Sifruta Perushim, the Talmud. Its purpose, its magama, is to understand the Gemara, to learn the Gemara. And in contrast, the other two, the Psakim and the Shelot Tshuvot, the purpose is to study halakha, you know, not necessarily in conjunction with the Gemara. Okay? So very important. So now, going back over to the time of the Hakamim, we have this type of literature called Sifrut HaKlalim. I remember a professor, he mentioned an interesting statement, I'm not sure where it comes from. It says, Sefer lelo hakdama keguf velo neshama. Okay, what does that mean to you? Sefer lelo hakdama keguf velo neshama. What does that mean?
A book and you don't know what its purpose, why it's written, how I'm supposed to do an analysis of it.
Yes, sir.
But it writes an instruction, says, this is the reason I'm writing it, this is how I should read it, this is the methodology that I used.
Excellent. Okay. Yes, sir. I was trying to think of a mashal, what mashal can I bring? So, he'll tell me this is a good mashal or not. Okay, so let's say we have a caveman. Okay, a caveman, and Elia Bra brings him the brand new latest model. I don't know, I hope it's not a PC, a nice new Mac, right? And you give it to the caveman. What's the caveman going to do, right? I don't know, maybe he'll, you know, knock his head on it. I don't know, what's he missing here, right? He's not necessarily, and it doesn't have to be a caveman, okay? He's not necessarily going to be able to tackle the sophisticated piece of equipment because, A, he's not from the same historical context, he's not from the same culture, he doesn't have the necessary hakdamot in order to open up. It doesn't mean that he can't do it, right? But it's not going to happen, right? So, like Mayor said, if a person does not have the basic background, the basic, how to do on Gemara, which is a sophisticated piece of equipment, let's say, he's not, you know, then maybe he's a caveman with a computer in his hand. Okay, works the other way around also. Not only, right, let's say we take a guy from today and I put a slide rule in his hand. Slide rule, does anybody know what a slide rule is? Okay, you see, he doesn't even know what a slide rule is. Okay, I happen to know what a slide rule is because my grandfather, Alav Shalom, among other things, was a mathematician. Okay. And I once saw this slide rule, I said, what is this? You know, and he explained to me what it is. A slide rule, right, is, it has, you know what a slide rule is?
Yeah, it's like this.
It's like this. It looks like a ruler, but it has two pieces and has numbers. And it's the old type calculator that they used in grade school or whatever. So today, you give me a slide rule, I say, okay, I can make lines with it, right? So again, it's not advanced or less advanced, but since I'm missing, I'm not from the same context or historical context or cultural context as the slide rule, I'm not necessarily going to know how to use it unless I have some type of a masoret baal peh or some type of a work, a book that's going to give me the background. So the hachamim who fashioned and put together Sifrei Klalim their mindset was, hey, a Gemara is an extremely sophisticated work. There are certain shitot and ikviyot, there are certain consistent ways and patterns in studying Gemara, and here we're going to commit to writing some of these mesorot, some of the traditional Kabbalah tradition that we received in teaching and understanding Gemara. So you have already Sifrei HaKoralim all the way back to the time of the Geonim. Okay, first Sefer Kalim that I know of. First Sefer Kalim that I know of is an interesting book called Seder Tanaim V'Amoraim. This is a bunch of books in one. The second one is called Seder Tanaim V'Amoraim. Okay, Seder Tanaim V'Amoraim is a great book to talk about in the opening about what is Sifrei HaKoralim, because its structure is the paradigm of what Sifrei HaKoralim generally speak about. Okay, so Seder Tanaim V'Amoraim was put together by a Gaon. Okay, a Gaon, an anonymous Gaon, we don't know who, okay, wrote Seder Tanaim V'Amoraim. On one of the manuscripts there's a date, okay, the date is around 886, Seder Tanaim V'Amoraim, from a Gaon Alum Shem, anonymous, from Sura. We know, or it's generally believed, he is from Sura. It's interesting, most of the systematic Perushim, also in Psakim, most of the ones who wrote Sifrei Psakim were from Sura. Okay? From Sura. Interesting. So, that's Seder Tanaim V'Amoraim. So let's talk about the structure of Seder Tanaim V'Amoraim. There are basically,
question, one of the last yeshivot to still exist in Bavel, right? This is even time of Sadia Gaon, I would imagine. Was in a Tumbadita?
Yeah, you're right.
The Sura
right.
Was...
So in the time, historically, in the time of the Geonim, you had two basic yeshivot, right? What were they? Sura and Tumbadita.
So now they turned into Tumbadita.
Correct. Now you're going way back, okay? So, originally in Bavel, the old yeshiva, I remember one of the shiurim, the Hakam said, what's the oldest academy? And everybody's like, Harvard, this, that, the Sorbonne, you know? I said, no, Yeshivat Nahar Da'ah, right? Yeshivat Nahar Da'ah, the Kabbalah, the tradition is that the Jews, already in the time of Hurban, Bait, Rishon, right, they already came to certain parts of Bavel over there, and they opened this yeshiva, Yeshivat Nahar Da'ah, so we're talking 500 more before the Common Era, this yeshiva stood in the early generation of Amoraim, Rav and Shmuel, okay? At the end of the Tanaim, the beginning of the Amoraim, the head honcho in Nahar Da'ah is who? Which Amora is in Nahar Da'ah? So, Shmuel, historically, Shmuel is the Rosh Yeshiva of Nahar Da'ah. Before Shmuel was Abu de Shmuel. What was his name? I don't know. Abu de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, was the head honcho in Nahar Da'ah. And Rav, he came back from Eretz Yisrael. He came to Bavel in Nahar Da'ah. And the head honcho was Abu de Shmuel. And Abu de Shmuel, around 220, right, passes away. So what happens? So Rav, he acquiesces. He gives up, to Shmuel. He says, listen, this is your place, Shmuel, right now. Like the Hachamim today, each one, says, they all get along with each other. Right? So, Shmuel became the Rosh Yeshiva of Nahar Da'ah, and Rav moves over to Sura, another city, and he opens the Yeshiva in Sura. That's, Rav is the Miyased of Yeshiva at Sura. Okay, what was Rav's real name, by the way? Abba Aricha, long daddy. Okay, Abba Aricha, really? Was his name? They call him Rav. Okay, so that is Yeshivat Nahar Da'ah. And as Moshe said, a generation or so afterwards, you have some crazy Persian, some crazy non-Jewish Persian. His name was Papa Bar Neser, and he destroys the entire city of Nahar Da'ah, and with it, he destroys the Yeshivat Nahar Da'ah. So, a student of Shmuel, Rav Yehuda Bar Yehezkel, he opens up yeshiva in Pumbedita, but you're right, this is really a continuation of Nahar Da'ah, and Pumbedita lasts until the end of the time of the of the Geonim, and Rav Haye Gaon is Rosh Yeshiva of Pumbedita. So the Nahardea Pumbedita institution is a very old one. Yeah.
So Sura and Pumbedita were at the same time?
Correct. Correct. So Sura and Nahardea were at the same time. Nahardea turns into Pumbedita, and then for the remainder, up until the end of the time of the Geonim, you have Sura and Pumbedita.
Okay? How far apart were they?
How far apart were they?
Were they
not far at all.
Miles,
not far at all.
Miles,
Pumbedita, I don't know about miles, but if we had a map on my computer, actually, sure they interact. Pumbedita actually literally means Pumbedita is more north. Okay, it's on the mouth of the river. Mouth of the delta. Pum is peh in Aramid. Bedita, right, is the delta. It's on the mouth of the delta. And Sura is a little bit southern, right?
So why did they open up a new... I missed that. Why did they open up...
Why did who open up? Why did Rav open up a new yeshiva?
No, the student of Shemuel, you said, opened up
Pumbedita. The entire city, Nahardea, was destroyed, including the yeshiva.
Oh, okay.
So he moved to Pumbedita, a different city, and opened up yeshiva at Pumbedita, which, in many respects, is a hemshech of Nahardea. Okay? So now, how did we get to this? Where were we a second ago?
We're talking about
the Teraim v'Amoraim. We said that it was made by a Gaon from Sura. Okay? And what is the structure of Seder Teraim v'Amoraim? This is going to tell us the structure of all the Sifrei HaKlalim. Then we'll move on to take a couple of examples. I try to take a couple of terms maybe from the sugya that we're studying with Hacham. Okay, so what is the structure of Sifrei HaKlalim? So if I open up Seder Teraim v'Amoraim, I'll see that there are two parts. The work is broken up into two parts. Okay, Chelek Aleph, we could call it the chronological or the historical portion of the work. So he starts out with all the Mekabelim of the Torah, Moshe Chibbel Torah Misinai, etc. and so on, and he deals with Amoraim and Tanaim, right? Who is this Amora and who is that Amora, right? It's very important to know who's who, because the Gemara is not something that, spontaneously combusts, okay, or generates out of itself, right? There is the historical context of each sugya is very important. The place is very important. This inyan of Amoraim and Tanaim, who were they, who came first, is extremely important understanding the sugya. Okay, contrary to what they might teach you today, who cares? You have a sugya. Abaye is talking to Rav Ashi. Really? Right? Nothing. Puts up a red flag, right? You go into Makor HaSfarim and you see, let's say, Moshe Rabbeinu in one picture holding Sefer Torah and Baba Sali next to him, right? Really, they live in the same story. Yeah, lamalo, right? So, in contrary to this Shita, right, the Hachamim were very, very meticulous about understanding Ravina, how many Ravinas are there? Not so pashut. Is two or three, right? How many, Rav Hamnuna are there, right? It's very important to understand that this is the isuk of the first part of Seder Tanaim v'Amoraim. It could be also that writing down the Shasheret Kabbalat HaTorah in that time period, again, we're in the 9th century, right, ninth century, was also had to do with being strengthening the Torah against the Karaim, right, the Karaim who, mitilim sfekot in the Shalshelet Kabbalat HaTorah, so maybe that's also a purpose here. Second half of the book, I would call not the historical aspect of the book, but the methodological aspect of the book, which is very important. Okay, so second half of the book deals with methodology of learning. Right, the Hachamim did not just throw you into Yama Talmud, but they gave klalim, they gave methodology. How do you learn the manual, the how-to-do? How do you learn Gemara? What are these, each munah in the Gemara has a connotation, has a meaning, has a special usage, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's what you have in the second half, okay?
The Hidah,
right, Tagaot, on on Seder Tanaim Vamoraim. It's very interesting that if I look through the generations, maybe we'll mention a bunch of works. You know, it's interesting, especially in the time of the Aharonim, the Hachamim who deal in this genre of Torah, of Sifrei HaKlalim, most of them are Sfaradim. It's very interesting. Hachamim and Sfaradim learned in a methodological way. Also the Hachamim in the 15th century, in the 16th century, see the Hachamim and Sfaradim, their books, at the end they had maftehot, they were very, very organized, right? So, it's interesting. This is an Isuk, this is a tome that, if you look at the works, you know, there's a lot of important exceptions, you know, we'll mention, but especially in the time of the Aharonim, all the Sifrei HaKlalim are Hachamim Sfaradim. They didn't just throw you in, right? How do they, you go to Yeshiva, you read the first word of the Mishnah, oh, Rashi, you didn't read the next word yet. Reb Chaim, what does Reb Chaim say? Let's first read the Mishnah, read, you know, let's take a look at the panoramic view. Okay, then, it's Rosh Hashem, you get to Rashi, you get, right? So, Hachamim Sfaradim learned in a very methodological way. So, if the second half of Seder Tanaim Vamorim deals with Klalim, Klalim means terminology. What is the term Matkifla, which we saw in the Sugya that we studied last night, refer to? We'll talk about it in a minute, right? What is the difference between, you know, Amar, Rabbi so-and-so, and Rabbi so-and-so Amar? There's a difference, mm-hmm. right? All these things have Klalim. Right? Now another type of klalim that you'll find in this Helek Sheni of Seder Tanaim Vamoraim is klalei psika. Right? So now klalei psika, you already find these in the Mishnah and the Gemara. Okay? If I look throughout the Mishnah, I can only think of one klal psika that's mentioned actually beferush in the Mishnah Masechta Adayot, Yachid v'Rabim Halacha k'Rabim. That's a klal psika. Right? I don't know what the halacha is. Well, left hanging, you have Rabbim and Yahid. Okay, Yahid and Rabbim, right? Halacha k'Rabbim. That's a klal mentioned in the Mishnah. In the Gemara, you have more sophisticated klalim. Also, klalim that are mentioned in the Gemara. For example, in the Gemara itself, it'll tell you, you know what? In the Mishnah, whenever you have a machloket, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yoseh, halacha k'Rabbi Rabbi Yoseh. Now comes the next question. Who can answer this one? What about Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yoseh? Who's the halakha going to be like?
They can't argue against each other.
Why not?
Because
all the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had five famous Talmidim who are the meat and potatoes of the Mishnah. Whenever you see the names, 90% of the time the names that you see in the Mishnah are the five famous names of Rabbi Akiva. Right? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Right? Help me out.
Yes.
Rabbi Yoseh Bar Halafta. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, who am I missing? Took you that long to do that one?
What?
I'm kidding. Okay, Rabbi Meir, right? Who am I missing again? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yoseh, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Did I say Rabbi Yoseh? Let's try again. Rabbi Yoseh, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai,
Rabbi Meir.
Who am I missing? I said Rabbi Yoseh. Okay, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yoseh, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai.
I said Yehuda, Meir, Shimon Bar Yochai.
Who am I missing? Okay, let's see. Rabbi Yehuda, I said, or Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Okay, Rabbi Elazar. Okay, Rabbi Elazar. Stam Rabbi Elazar. These are the five famous Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. And well, that's Stam Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, right? Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. Right? So now, so we said already, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Lachak Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yoseh, Lachak Rabbi Yoseh. Now, this is not mentioned in the Gemara, but
I just read it.
Okay, very good. So obviously, right, the chain rule dictates that if you have Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yoseh, so Lachak Rabbi Yoseh. Okay?
Who came up with this Kelalim?
Some of these Kelalim, excellent question. Some of these Kelalim are mentioned beferush in the Gemara. The Kelalim that I just mentioned to you are mentioned beferush in the Gemara.
Okay.
So this is the beginning, so I can say the beginning of Sifrut HaKelalim. Not only is it back to the time of Gaonim, already inside the Gemara you have this, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the Gemara you have a Kelal already mentioned, you know. Whenever there's a Mahlok, it's going to be between Rav and Shemuel. Halakha is like Rav when it comes to. Isure. And Halakha is like Shemuel when it comes to Mamone. Dine. Dine means Dine Mamonot. Right? Shemuel was an expert businessman. Okay, he was a Hassan, he was a businessman. He knew the Fu'ah, he knew the stars also, right? For Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Yeah, very interesting.
That's why he got onto the...
Yeah.
That's the reason why he got into the Beit Din or something.
Okay.
So he didn't get
Tzimicha, right? It's interesting. That's a very fascinating Gemara over there. It's very odd. Gemara, about Sefer Shel Adam HaRishon, and it's very interesting Gemara. Okay?
Is that why it's called Shemuel? He didn't get
Tzimicha? Absolutely. Okay? So interesting. So you find in the Gemara itself, you find these kelarim. Halakha is like Shemuel when it comes to Dinei Mamonot.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Anything not Dinei Mamonot, halakha would be like Rav. Okay? So these are kelarim that are mentioned in the Gemara. Now, if I open up Seder, Tanaim, Vamoraim, there are many, many kelarim here that are not mentioned in the Gemara. In other words, these are kelarim that the Geonim received from the Saboraim, received Baal Peh. Right? This is the natural hemshech of the klalim. For example, we have a klal here in Seder Tanaim, but when it's amazing, Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshat, the halakha is like Rav Nachman when it comes to Dine, and like Rav Sheshat when it comes to Isurei, right? The same concept. It's an extension of what's mentioned in Gemara, because Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov was the student Muvhak of Shemuel, and Rav Nachman, as the Chacham mentioned last night, was Dayan, right? He was an expert in Dinei Mamonot. So, Seder Tanaim Vamonim was Dan Yehidi, right? Seder Tanaim Vamonim brings down Halakha Ke Rav Nachman Bedine, Rav Sheshad Beisurei. These were Misorot that they received. Baal Peh.
But somebody began those Misorot.
Okay.
Who has the authority to do so?
Good question. Okay, so A, this is what they received in the previous generations. And B, this, the Geonim are the natural descendants, right, historically, right, and geographically of the Amoraim. And they, you know, developed certain norms in halakha, right? You have the Gemara. The Gemara is the centerpiece of halakha. And you have certain mahlokot that are left hanging in the Gemara. And the hakamim, right, of the generations, developed certain norms. Well, how are we going to be posek halakha when things are left, when in the sugya there's no indication? So are we posek like Rav Nachman or like Rav Sheshat? Okay, well, they developed, they received, okay, norms on how to deal with mahlokot that are left open, okay, and they have that authority to do that, and that's the conventions that they developed and passed on. And each generation, you see how it builds on. I mentioned many shorim. Right, we don't knock the previous generation. Each generation builds another level on the yisodot of the previous generation. So you see, this kelal is very similar to the kelal of halakha ke that's mentioned in Gemara beferush. Not halakha ke Shmuel bedine. Same thing over halakha ke Rav Nachman bedine, and like Rav Sheshad beisur. So that is seder Tanaim v'Amoraim. Okay. Now,
just want to get 100%. So they based on the kelalim of the Talmud, based on those methods, I guess they apply to their own cases. Like based on the kelalim of the Talmud, I guess they
kelalim in Talmud are very scarce, and not so many kelalim mentioned the Ferush in the Talmud. Again, but what do we mean by kelalim? So there are different types of kelalim. So one type of kelalim that we mentioned is definition of terminology, right? What does it mean, matkif and urminhu, and etc. and so on?
Yes.
That they received Baal Peh. That's the proper interpretation of the Gemara that they received.
Right.
Now we started to speak about klale psika.
Right.
When certain mahlokot are left open in the Gemara, well, how should I go?
Right.
So that, A, they received, and they also developed.
Yeah.
They also developed on their own how to be posek. Okay? And they set certain norms, and these are norms that are accepted by the Rishonim, right? Some of the Rishonim even took the Kalim a little too seriously, okay? Because the early Hachamim said beferush, these Kalim, for example, Kalei Psika, they're not Halakha Moshe Mi Sinai, right? These Kalim when do I fall back on the kelal? These the Baalei Kelalim say this b'ferush. Many of the Rishonim say this b'ferush. When do I use these kelalei psika? Let's say I read the Gemara and I study the sugya, and the sugya clearly comes to a conclusion or seems to be moving towards the conclusion that the halakha is like Rabbi Meir against the machloket that he has with Rabbi Yehuda. Oh, it's a kelal. Halakha Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, halakha Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, even that cloud mentioned the Gemara, the kelal you fall back on as a default. When something's left hanging, oh, let me fall back to the kelal. But if there's a clear indication, or maybe even a not so clear indication, in the sugya itself that the halakha should be the Rabbi Meir, of course you can make halakha the Rabbi Meir. The kelalim is not, okay? It's a very important point that the Rishonim make, the Rashba makes, even the later Rishonim make this point.
It's 99% time, that's like,
not even. Not even. It's my default. It's my default setting, okay? In contemporary terms, right? So, if there's no indication in the sugya how I should make that halakha, okay, we fall back on the kelal. But we're talking about kelalei psika. The other kelalim, theoretically, should work 100%, right? The kelalim of what the terminology is referred to, etc., and so on. It's a very interesting interesting kelalim, okay? So, your homework, you know, from now on, any kelal we study together, you guys have to always keep it in your mind and see, does it work every time that you study, every sugya you study now for the rest of your life, right? You have to see, does this work or not? And if it doesn't work, so then you have to do two things. First of all, you have to look into the gifsa'ot, into the manuscripts, which is a topic within itself, and see, you know, maybe maybe in the manuscript they use a different term, right? Maybe it's Tanu Rabbanan in the manuscript and not Tana, right? And number two, if you break the kelal, okay, so now you have to formulate a new kelal, you know, that's your, okay. But, so let's talk about, so we spoke about the first sefer of kelalim, right, Seder Tanaim v'Amoraim. In the time of the Geonim, you have other sifrei kelalim. I would mention one very important sefer of kelalim, which is the book of, one of the books, I would say the Gaon, who wrote the most works, even more than Rabbeinu Saadia Gaon probably, is Rabbi Shmuel ben Hofni Gaon. Rabbi Shmuel ben Hofni Gaon, take a guess what yeshiva he was from?
Somewhere in Israel.
No, he's a Gaon means, you're right, there are Gaonei Eretz Yisrael, but originally the classic usage of the term Gaon was either Gaon,